All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's pick up. Today's daf is Memtes. We're going to pick up from the top of Memtes. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ima heicha dehadra lebe." So we'll say it sounds like we're picking up in the middle of something, but the truth is actually is a self-contained concept. "Ve'ima," and say heicha dehadra lebe nasha hadra lemilsa kamaisa. So we'll say, remember, we're speaking about the sugya as to the Mishnah was teaching us about these different cases as to when the girl ultimately leaves the rishus. When does she leave the domain of her father? When is she in the domain of her father versus when is she considered to be in the domain of her husband? And remember, the chiddush that we were talking about over here is this idea that a woman could be in the domain of her husband even prior to going ahead and actually entering into the chuppah, because the notion of entering into the husband's rishus affects some type of what we'll call quasi nisuin. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ima heicha dehadra lebeinasha hadra lemilsa kamaisa." So I'll say, I might have thought that in a situation of where she returns back to her father's home, that perhaps she returns back to her previous state, right? That maybe halacha l'maaseh, if she was in the rishus of the husband, but then either again she's widowed or she's divorced and she goes back to the husband's home, perhaps she should go back to the state or the relationship that she was with her father before she went to her husband's rishus. Amar Rava, so Rava said, "Hu kivar paska." We already learned this. Hu kivar paska tana de Rabbi Shmuel. The tana de Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi said this is already paskin in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. The tana de Rabbi Shmuel. The neder amana ugrusha kol asher asra al nafsha yakum alaha. So Rabbi said the pasuk says that a neder, a vow of an amana, a widow, or a grusha, a divorcee, anything that she asks on herself, yakum alaha means will stand. Will stand. Mata Mulomar Sabosi Sigmar says, what's the chiddush in this statement? Vahalo mutzes michlal av umutzes michlal ba. That was what the Torah seems to say is that if an amana or a grusha makes an eder, anything she goes ahead and she asers stands, which is another way of saying that no one has the ability to annul her vows. So Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Meaning, Rabbi say, who are the two people who potentially have the ability to annul the vow of a woman? Either her father or her husband. Well, in this case over here, she is obviously married already, so her father doesn't have rishus on her. She's a widow or she's divorced, so her husband doesn't have rishus on her. So of course, wherever she takes a vow on, whatever she vows is going to stand because no one but her has the ability to go ahead and annul it. So the Gemara says, v'halo mutzas michlalav, umutzas michlal bal. She's removed from the rishus of the av and removed from the rishus of the bal. Ella, rather, the Torah must be referring to the following case: Ella shem hari shem masar ha'av l'shluchei habal, o shem masar shluchei ha'av l'shluchei habal. Rabbi said, rather, what must the case be? The case must be is where the father, her father, gave her over to the agents of the husband, or the agents of the father gave her over to the agents of the husband. Vinis armala baderech onis gersha. And what happens? Before she reached the husband's home, so meaning she's traveling with the husband's emissaries, with his agents, and the husband dies on the way. Or, because you must remember, in all of these cases, so of course, kiddushin has already taken place. The issue over here is that formal nisuin, or entrance into the chuppah, has not yet taken place. So she's been given over already to the agents of the husband. Husband dies on the way, onis gersha, or he divorces her on the way. So we'll say, so what's her status? Heich ani koreba. So what should I call her? Meaning, what's her status now? Beis aviha shazu. Obeis Baila Shazu. So I will say, so whose Rishus does she find herself in? Do we call her again a member of the father's household? Or do we call her a member of the husband's household? Ela Lomar Lecha. So obviously I will say, we can't call her a member of the husband's household because he's either dead or he divorced her. So I'd be tempted to say that maybe she goes back to being a member of the father's household. Ela Lomar Lecha. Therefore, the Torah is coming to teach us that once she leaves the rishus of her father, he no longer has the ability to go ahead and annul her vows. So we'll say, so therefore, again, it's actually very interesting that the Gemara explains over here that that's what this pasuk is referring to. That this notion that the neder of an almana and a grusha, whatever she asks on herself, will stand, i.e., no one else has the ability to annul her vow, the Gemara understands as referring to a very specific case where she's been handed over from the father to the agents of the husband, and in the midst of being transported to the home of the husband dies or divorces her. I might have thought that now she reverts back to her father's home. Kamashmala, no. Once a girl leaves her father's rishus, she does not return.
That's for everything, not just...
So that we're going to see. Good, that we're going to see. So I will say, so remember, this pasuk, of course, is in the context of Hafaras Nedarim. Right? So remember, there are many other ramifications for whose rishus she's in other than annulment of vows. So we'll see how far we extend this. Amra Papa, Afana Nami Tanina. So our Papa said, we also learned this idea. Haba al Na'araham Urasa. It will say, if a person has relations with a Nara Murasa, remember, so this is a girl, a Nara, who is betrothed to someone else. Eino Chayiv, you are not Chayiv. Now, we'll say, Chayiv over here in this context, we're going to see means, you're not Chayiv Skila, Ad Shetei Nara Bisula Murasa, until the girl is a Nara. So she is, I mean, you're only chayiv if she is a naro, if she is a besula, and if she is has erusin with another man. And ultimately, again, she also has to be in her father's home. Of course, not literally geographically in her father's home, but again, halachically in her father's home. So the Gemara says, Bishlama na'ara v'la bogeres. So I understand why you need her to be a naro as opposed to bogeres, because you're supposed to say, that's gzeres hakosov. Right? The Torah itself, when it speaks about the betrothed girl who goes in and has relations with a man who's not her husband, the Torah Dafka says Nara. Now we understand, by the way, that in the Torah, Nara is not just simply an expression, but rather Nara is a specific category of person. So therefore the Torah says Nara. Nara teaches us that it only applies if she's a Nara and not a Bogeres. Now also, remember again, let's be clear. When, let's say, for example, we say that it only applies if she's a Nara and not a Bogeres. If a man has relations with a Bogeres who has erusin with another man, there's also a punishment. Remember, what's novel about Nara Murasa? Skila, that's the idea over here, as opposed to if normal adultery, regular adultery, all right, carries with it chenek. So therefore, that's the Gemara saying over here. So you shouldn't get the wrong idea that you're only chayiv for adultery if it's an ara, but if it's a bogeres, you know, it's okay. You know, so the idea over here is, it's only, remember, it's unique skila. So when do we say, I understand that it's only skila if she's an ara, because the pasuk says nara. And from that we learn out, nara v'la bogeres, not a bogeres, besula. I understand why she has to be a besula, because the pasuk says besula, and that tells us velo beula, that this specific din of skila only applies to a girl who is a besula. Meurasa, it dafka says that she is meurasa. We learn out from there what velo nisua, that it doesn't, because the pasuk again, remember, a man has relations with a woman who is in a sua, full fledged married woman. That's chenek. But what does it mean when the Torah teaches us that she is in her father's home? I mean, what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says, "My love, lemeute masara av l'shluchi habal." Does that not come to exclude the following case of where the father gave her over already to the agents of the husband, and the agents of the husband are bringing her to the husband for nisu and for chuppah purposes? And Rabbi said, therefore, the Torah is telling me that once the father hands her over to the agents of the husband, she is no longer beveis aviha. If she's no longer beveis aviha, then what? Then that means, for example, if she were to have relations with another man during that journey to her husband's home, what would be the halacha? She'd be chayaves, they'd both be chayav in chenek, as opposed ultimately to skila. Amra nachar yitzchak, afana nami tanina. We also learn this. Habo al ishes ish. If a man has relations with a married woman, once she has entered into the rishus of her husband for nisuin purposes, even though she has not yet had relations with her husband, so relations with her carry with them a penalty of chenek. But Rabbi said, we see from here that what? That if she entered into the Rishos of her husband, just Ba'alma, right? Ba'alma means Velotna, Rashi says, Velotna nichnasa l'chopa, Shmamina, indeed, see that Lamaisa, that lamaisa again that she would be chayavis in chenek. So Rabbi, what it seems to be saying over here. Let me just rephrase that last proof. So that last proof is saying that if you notice, it just says habal ishes ish kevan shenichnasa l'rishus habal. So Rabbi uses this verbiage as once she enters into the rishus habal. Now what the Gemara is pointing out over here is that rishus habal is a very nondescript lashon. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that rishus habal even means what? Even means once she is handed over to the agents of the husband. That's already called Rishus HaBaal. And you see from here that what? That once she's handed into Rishus HaBaal, already a quasi-Nisuin has been affected. And once a quasi-Nisuin has been affected, so also remember, now if we bring this all together, here's what we have. Right? It's the bottom line, Halacha L'maisa, once a girl has been handed over by her father to the agents of the husband, a quasi-Nisuin has been affected. So what type of Nisuin? So remember, once this quasi-Nisuin has been affected, so working backwards. Number one, for example, if she were now to have adultery with another man, meaning a man who's not her husband, so then what would be the halacha? They'd be punishable by chenek and not skila. So that's ramification number one. Going back to our Mishnah before, we saw the financial ramifications as well, that if she dies, he inherits her. If she finds something, husband is entitled to it. If she earns money, husband is entitled to it, with one notable exception, which is? Good. Truma. Right? So remember, Truma we saw yesterday, that again, remember Truma was the one exception, that although again, Chuppah affects, I know, you're just modest. Right? Chuppah goes ahead. Remember, Chuppah affects this quasi-Nisuin, except for Truma. Now remember, the Gemara did not tell us why. That's because it's going to be a sugi later on, but we know that she can't eat Truma until when? Until ultimately she enters into the actual Chuppah itself. Okay, so we'll say, so this is just interesting, and we're going to see this theme, by the way, come up again, this notion that you could have quasi-nisuin, which is fascinating. Because normally we will see the Gemara will make a declarative statement later on that chuppah kona is only chuppah that ultimately affects nisuin, but yet we see that to a certain degree it's not totally true. Essentially, what the Gemara really is driving out of here, which is a fascinating principle, which is as soon as the influence of the av is gone, which is accomplished by the father handing her over to the agents of the husband, there's like a little bit of a void. It's like that void, and so it's the influence of the husband that fills that void. That's what affects this quasi-nisuin. But we're not finished with it, even though we're picking up with a new Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, a father is not obligated to feed his daughter, not obligated to support his daughter. Now, I will say, obviously, we're going to see this clarified in the Gemara, but this only refers to children above a certain age. Obviously, when children are young and fully dependent, a father is obligated for both his, not just his daughters, but also his sons. So this is obviously talking at some more advanced age, which we'll discuss. So a father is not obligated to support his daughter. Zet midrash darsh Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lefnei chacham b'keren b'yavne. And this is something that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshened in front of the Chachamim in Keren B'Yavne. I also remember Keren B'Yavne refers to the yeshiva, literally the vineyards of Yavne, but they call the yeshiva Keren B'Yavne. Why? Because the chairs were arranged in these not straight rows, but rather again like a little bit like a curved, I don't know what the, yeah, semicircle, but not really a semicircle, like rows, but like with a little bit of a slant. We'll actually see in the Gemara, like a vineyard. They look like a vineyard, so they call the yeshiva the Keren B'Yavne. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah dashes in front of Keren B'Yavne, habanim yirshu v'habanos yizonu. So sons inherit their father, and daughters are supported. And I will say, now what he's referring to over here is that this is a, if you look at Rashi says, Habanim Yirshu Vahabanos Yizonu, Shtei Takonos Tiknu Beizdin. So Beizdin enacted two takonos, B'tanai Ksuva, in certain conditions in a woman's Ksuva, Habanim Yirshu Ksuvas Benin Dichrin, Desnan B'mas Nisin, Benin Dichrin Di Yehavin Lechi Minoi, Inun Yarsin Kesef Ksuvasech, Yeser Achul Kehon, Di'im Achun. Vahinu Abonim Yershu Ksuvas Benin Dichrin. We'll see this. This is going to be the Takana of Benin Dichrin. Benin Dichrin means Benin is sons. Dichrin, remember, in Aramaic, Dalid and Zayin are interchangeable. So Dichrin is Zichrin. So the idea over here is that there was a special Tanai Nekesuva that a woman would have written that she would say that I want my sons, the sons that you and I have together, they should inherit my Kesuva in totality. Now, the reason why this was often written is that if a man had other sons from previous marriages, so his wife, his present wife, wanted to make sure that it would be her sons who inherited her Kesuva. So sons inherit the Kesuva of their mother, and Bnos Yizonu. Now, what that means is another Tanai in the Kesuva is that in the Kesuva it's written that a man agrees to support, to have to either him or his estate support the daughters he has with this particular woman. So Elazar ben Azariah said, Mahabonim einon yarshin ella achar misas ha'av, just like sons only inherit their father after the father dies. Af habonos ein nizonos ella la'achar misas avien. So too, again, daughters are only supported after the death of their father as well. Rabbi Zbos says, very interesting, that during the lifetime of the father, there is no obligation to support his daughters. We'll see why does he single out daughters, but there is an obligation to support them from the estate after the father dies. So obviously we have to shed some light on this. Says the Gemara, b'mizonos b'do de'eno chayif. Ha b'mizonos b'no chayif. So we'll say, what's interesting to note is the following. The Mishnah says that a man is not obligated to support his daughter. So it sounds like it's Dafka's daughter that he's not obligated to support. But his son, he is obligated to support. So the Gemara says, no, bita namichov hudaleka hamitzvaika. Or on the other possibility, it's possible to say, the Mishnah says, there's no obligation to support your daughter. But what? But it's a good thing. Both say this is the chilik between mitzvah and chova. Chova means something that is obligatory. Mitzvah means something that's a good thing to do. So perhaps what the Mishnah is saying is, although there is no obligation to support your daughter, it is a mitzvah, it's a good thing. But apparently sons, there is an obligation to support. So the Gemara says, all right, let's analyze this. Mani masnisin. Whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Lo Rabbi Meir, lo Rabbi Yehuda, lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Can't be Rabbi Meir, can't be Rabbi Yehuda, can't be Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Why? Disanya, because we learned in a Braisa, mitzvah lozun es habanos. There is a mitzvah. Which, remember, it's important. It's a good thing to go ahead and support one's daughters. Kava chomer lebanim da'aski b'torah. All the more so, one should support their sons who are osek who learn Torah. Div Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, mitzvah lazun es habanim. There is a mitzvah to go ahead and support sons. Kavachomer lebanos. More the more so you should support your daughters. Why? Mishum zilusa. Because again, it'll be degrading for the girls if they have to go out and beg. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch says, chova lazun es habanos. La'achar misas avihen. There is an obligation to support your daughters from your estate after you die. Ava b'chayi avihen. But during the lifetime of the father, elu ve'elu inon nizonin. Both sons and daughters are not supported by the father. So the Gemara says, okay, let's analyze this. Mani bas nisin. Whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? I Rabbi Meir, if we want to say it's Rabbi Meir, well, that can't be. Ha'amar banim mitzvah. Rabbi Meir just said that it's only a mitzvah to support the sons. But Rabbi Meir, remember, what's our inference from the Mishnah? The inference from the Mishnah was that it's an obligation to support the sons. Because remember, the Mishnah started out by saying a father is not obligated to support his daughter, which sounds like the Mishnah saying a father is obligated to support his sons. Therefore, it can't be Rabbi Meir. I Rabbi Yehuda, ha'amar banim nami mitzvah. For the same crowd of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda also holds that it's also a mitzvah to support sons, which again doesn't seem to say it's an obligation, whereas our Mishnah seems to indicate that it's obligatory. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, and if Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, so he said, afilu mitzvah nami leka. So also Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka says that during the lifetime of the father, there's no mitzvah to support sons or daughters. So the Mishnah doesn't reflect the view of either of these opinions. So the Gemara says, ibay same Rabbi Meir, ibay same Rabbi Huda, ibay same Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. To which the Gemara now finally says, no, I'm going to do even better. The truth is, the Mishnah could reflect any of these views. Ibayis ema Rabbi Meir, maybe it could be Rabbi Meir. Why? V'achi kamar is what Rabbi Meir says. V'achi kamar ha'av eno chayev b'mizonos bito. Father is not obligated in the mizonos of his daughter. V'hu adin libno, and so too with his son. Ha'mitzvah b'bito ika. Right, but there is a mitzvah to support his daughter. Kavachomer lebanim. All the more so for his sons. V'hadik tani bito. I say, why does the Mishnah single out bito, daughter? Ha'kamash malon amud beis da'afilu bito chuva chova hudaleka. To teach us that although with a daughter there is no obligation to support her, ha'mitzvah ika, but there is a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah. V'ibayisim Rabbi Yehuda. Or the other possibility, Rabbi says, that what? That The Mishnah does affect the view of Rabbi Yehuda v'Achi Kamar. This is what it means to say, Ha'av enu chayv mezonos bito. A father is not obligated in the mezonos of his daughter. V'chol shekein libno. And all the more so not for a son. But ha mitzvah bebeno ika. But there is a mitzvah to nevertheless support his son. Kavachomer lebanos. All the more so for daughters. I v'hadik tani bito. Why does the Mishnah single out daughter? Ha'kamashwal dafilu bito chovaleka. To teach us that one would have thought that for the daughter there is an obligation to support her. Kamashwal that there is not. V'boisim Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. And maybe you want to say that the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. V'achikam, this is what it means to say. Eino chayiv b'mezonos bito. One is not chayiv in the mezonos of his daughter. V'hu adin libno. And so too with his son. And perhaps you would have thought that what? That there is no mitzvah even to support them. And since, again, but since there is an obligation to support daughters after the death of the father, therefore tani nami eino chayiv. Therefore, the Mishnah is quick to point out that the father is not obligated to support them during his lifetime. So we'll say what comes out is the three opinions that we thought that the Mishnah could not reflect, in fact, technically could be reflected in the Mishnah. But I will say, what's the resolution over here? So Amar Rabbi Eloi, Amar Reish Lakish. I will say this is really interesting. Amar Rabbi Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. Sorry, let me read that again. Amar Rabbi Eloi Bar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina Beusha. In the city of Usha, Hiskinu Sheyehei Adam Zan Esbana Vespinosav Kishem Kitanim. I'll say, listen to this. So Usha, remember again, I will say, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so the Sanhedrin moved to a series of different places. Usha was one of the places, again, where the Sanhedrin sat, and they made many takanos in Usha, many enactments. So Rabbi Eloi says that Usha was one of the places where they enacted that a man should support his sons and his daughters while they are young. And interestingly enough, if you look, Rashi says over here, Kishen Ketanim, Rashi says, Ad Shiaviu Saros. Literally, until they display signs of physical maturation, or in other words, until they become gidolim. That a parent should support their children until they become, 12 years old, 13 years old. That's when a parent should support their children. Now, if you look at Tosus just very quickly, Tosus says, Kishem Kitanim, Aval Kitani Kitanim, L'chuli Alma Chayiv, Kidar Mitzav Afapi. So we'll say, remember again, this is why I mentioned this in the Mishnah. Now, what's Kitani Kitanim? So Kitani Kitanim means little kids, right? So we'll say, we're going to give some ages to this in just a little bit. I actually mentioned that yesterday, that really the Gemara's original thinking was until the age of six. That until the age of six, a parent should support his children, and that's true for sons and daughters. From the age of six and on, a child is self-sufficient enough, and a parent is not obligated to go out and support the child. But Tosafot just pointed out that it goes without saying that before the age of six, of course a parent is going ahead and supporting a child. Now comes on Rabbi Eloi and says, in Usha, they made a takana, that in fact a parent should even support their children past the age of six, to the stage of halachic adulthood. So the Gemara says, Ibailahu, Hilchasakavase, and Hilchasakavase. So what's very interesting is the following. You can make as many takanas as you want, right? But takanas are only meaningful if the people abide by them. So the Gemara is asking over here is, okay, I understand the rabbis made a takana on Usha, just out of curiosity, does the halacha actually follow that takana or not? Tashma, so we learned. Kihava asu the kamei Rav Yehuda. Kihava asu kamei Rav Yehuda. I will say there was an individual who came before Rav Yehuda who was not supporting his kids. If you look at Rashi, it says over here, Tashma hilchasakavase elameima arminalei veule yichalkalim. I'm sorry, so actually we don't need to. So man came before Rav Ashi, and he was not supporting his children. So Rav Ashi said, Amar lehu yaarod yalda vaabnei masa shadja. The jackal gave birth, and it sends its young upon the people of the city. Look at Rashi over here. Yarod yalda v'abnei masa shadja. So Rashi says, Hatonin holy toldosav v'hitil parnasasan al b'nei ha'ir. So Rashi says over here, this particular animal doesn't care for its young. So Yehuda was very upset at this man. He said, you have these kids, and you're not taking care of them. So we'll say, now what's interesting about this is the following. Now if you notice again, Rabbi Yehuda, and I will say, now what we're going to see a number of stories like this, where essentially these Rabbanim are trying to shame these fathers into supporting their kids. Now, the fact that they're only shaming them into supporting their kids, as opposed to what? Forcing them to support their kids, would seem to indicate that there was not halachic muscle to get them to support their kids over the age of six. So they tried to publicly embarrass them in order to get them to do what they need to do. Tashma, another example of this. I'm sorry, I just read that. When the man who was not caring for his young children came over Rav Chisda, Amar Lahu, so he said, Rav Chisda to the people around him, Kafu le'asisa b'tzibura, turn over, asisa will say is like the mortar stone. So turn over the mortar stone. In other words, make for yourself a platform, get up on the platform, v'leikom v'leima, and stand up there and cry out, Orva boi b'nei. Even a raven takes care of its children. Vahu gavra lo ba'i b'nei. And this man does not take care of his children. So same idea, Rabbi Rav Chisda was saying, get up and announce about this guy that he's not taking care of his kids. Publicly shame him. So the Gemara says, Vahu gavra lo ba'i b'nei. V'orva ba'i b'nei. Is that true that a raven takes care of its young? But we learned in the pasuk, livne orev and livne orev asher yikro. So let's remember again this pasuk that we say, no sin levei lachma, livne sin Shabbos davening, livne orev asher yikro. Hakadosh Baruch Hu gives to the behemoth, to the animal its lechem, and to the children of the raven who call out. Which Rabbi say sounds like what? That when the young ravens call out, the mother and the father, they dafka do not answer. So why is he using the example of the orev? So it's actually interesting. Lokasha habichiyure habuch. I will say this is really quite fascinating. Apparently, when little ravens are born, so they are white. They are white. So what happens when they're white? So interesting enough, right? Don't please don't like read any other narratives into this. You know, I can see already the wheels are turning. Right? So the idea over here is they're white, and ultimately again the parents don't recognize them. So because the parents don't recognize them, they don't feed them. As they get older, I guess their coat or whatever it is, the feathers turn black. At that point in time, the parents do recognize them, and that's when the parents begin to support them. So the pasuk over here is making reference ultimately to what? Ultimately to when the children are first born. So that's when Akash Parakhu is there for them. But over time, this even makes Rav Chisda's argument even stronger. Even the Orev, who is initially indifferent to its young, ultimately takes responsibility for its young. But this guy, this father, right, he's not even taking responsibility for his young. Look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says over here, Uchmi kishe gadol mashchir va'in va'av o'noso. When the little baby raven gets older and its feathers turn black, that's when the parents love it. But in the beginning, when the little raven is white and doesn't look like the parents, ultimately, again, they reject the young. So the Gemara says, Kiava asa coming to Rava. Same thing. When this deadbeat dad was coming before Rava, wasn't supporting his kids, Amrle necha lecha demisini banecha mitzdaka. So Rava said to the father, tell me, do you think it's appropriate that your children are supported from tzedaka? See, Rava was giving him mussar. There was say again. Now the point that seems to be coming out of all of this over here is that halacha l'maisa, it seems to be all of these rabbanim were able to give mussar. They were able to publicly shame and embarrass, but what were they not able to do? They were not able to extract money. Remember, we'll say, we saw already beforehand that when there is a halachic, right, when Bezin has the muscle, they're able to be yardin l'nechasav. They could go down to one's property and extract and take whatever they want. The fact that they're not doing it, but they're just simply relying on shaming the individual seems to indicate that l'maisa, that lemaisa we don't paskin like the takana and usha velo amran and abosai. So now where we're standing right now is, although we would strongly advise a father to support his children, his young children, who are, let's say, above the age of 6 but below the age of 12-13, we can't force him to do so. However, so the Gemara says velo amran, when do we say we can't force him? Ella de lo amid. Now, I will say, lo amid literally means that he was not evaluated. And I will say, what that means is he's not wealthy. Meaning, so if we know that he's not wealthy, so I can't force, halacha, the Beis Din can't force a father to support his young children. But, aval amid, but if we know that the father is wealthy, absolutely kafinon le'al karche. We force him to support his children. And so what that means is, if we know for a fact that he has the funds to be able to support his kids, then we could seize assets, then we could do other things in order to force him to support his children, his young children. Ki hadu Rava, Gemara gives an example of this, like Rava, Kafye Rav Nasan Bar Ami, Va'apik Mine Dalid Me'azuzi Litztaka. Like Rav Nasan Bar Ami, who went ahead and extracted, like Rava, who forced Rav Nasan Bar Ami to give 400 zuz litztaka. And I was saying, now that's not about supporting kids. That was actually he extracted money from 400 zuz to give tzedakah. He forced them to give tzedakah. So the Gemara is just using this as an example that if you know that someone is wealthy, and you know, meaning you being the Beis Din, knows that that individual should be supporting certain causes in a more generous fashion, the halacha gives the Beis Din certain rights to extract money. So just like Rava was able to go and extract from Rabbi Nasan 400 zuz, it's actually a very good fundraising technique here, right? So therefore, again, we see from here that halacha lemaisa, a father, if the Beis Din know a father has money, they could extract money from the father to support his children. Amar Rabbi Loi, Amar Reish Lakish, Be'usha Eskinu, another example, in Usha they instituted, Hakosef Kol Nechasav Lebanav. And Rabbi says, it's actually a very interesting case. If somebody, let's say, gifted all of his property to his children, but I will say this is happening during his lifetime. So, you know, for example, even today people do this. People do this again. I don't know the details of it.
Intervivos.
Right, that was the word I was looking for. Intervivos, right, intervivos trust. Right, so people do it, right, to shield assets from Medicare and Medicaid and all this kind of stuff. So the idea over here is he read ahead and he gave over all of his assets to his children. So in Usha, they made the following takana. Hu v'ishto nizone mehem. The husband and wife, meaning the father and mother who conveyed all of their assets, are still supported by the assets, meaning that the son doesn't have the right to say, Dad, get a job. You know, get a job. You gave me your money. Don't be lazy. I know you're 85, but, you know, you still have some productive years left in you, right? You gave me the assets. You don't have any rights in the assets. No, in Usha, they instituted that children, the parents are supported from the same money they gave over to their children. So the truth is, I don't say what the chiddush in that is. We've already said something more mechiddush, which is what? So we'll say, if we've already said that the widow of a man is supported from his estate, let's say the husband dies, so the halacha is that the orphans must go ahead and support the widow, even if she is not their mother, they must support her. So if the widow has to be supported, all the more so, the father and the mother who actually conveyed their assets to their children, of course they're supported by the estate. So the Gemara says, "Deshalach Ravin biigarta," because Ravin went ahead and sent in a letter, "Misha meis, if someone died, v'iniach almana, and left behind the widow, ubas, and the daughter, amanas amanaso nizonas minachasav." Ultimately, again, the amana is supported from the property. Now, this is a case over here where the father has no other surviving relative other than his wife and his daughter. So who inherits him in such a situation like that? The daughter. So let's say before the daughter gets married, the wife is supported from the estate. The widow is supported from the estate. Now let's say the daughter gets married, which means now there's a husband in the picture. So the daughter now has this property. The halacha still is amanaso nizones minachasav. Ultimately, again, the amana is still supported from the estate. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Let's say the daughter predeceases her mother. Now, what happens to that property when the daughter dies? Who does it go to? It goes to her husband, which now means that property that originally began with the amana's husband, then when the amana died, it went to the deceased daughter. Then when the daughter got married, it was shared. Her husband got benefit. Now the daughter died. Husband inherited it. So the Avi Yishayla is what? The Avi Yishayla is, what rights to support does the Amana have now that essentially the property is owned by who? Right? Someone who is not related to her. Right? Which essentially is her son-in-law. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Achos Osher Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Ayodi Hayamaisa. I write, this happened to me. I had this case. The Amru, and we said, Amanaso nizones minachasov. And I will say, we paskin in this case, and it's actually quite interesting that the son-in-law still has an obligation to go ahead and support his mother-in-law. So we'll say again, apparently what comes out from this is that you are eternally tether to your mother-in-law, right? I'm saying, like this mamish, it doesn't matter even once the daughter is gone. Lemaise, again, the mother-in-law is, yeah, at least in a financial sense, assuming you inherited the property from the wife, halacha lemaise, the son-in-law will have the obligation to go ahead and support his mother-in-law, support the widow.
Also, even if that woman's not the mother of the daughter that dies.
Oh, correct. Yes, correct, correct. Right. It doesn't have to be his mother-in-law. That is correct. Meaning, let me say it differently. He is obligated to support the widow of his father-in-law. Whether that woman was his wife's mother or not is irrelevant. Her right to support is as a result that she is the widow of his former father-in-law. So the Gemara says the following. So therefore, again, if we're already saying this, who the ishtomi boy? So we'll say, remember, if you're already seeing these extreme cases that these individuals are getting support, so it goes without saying that's what? Essentially, the Gemara is trying to build up as an argument that obviously now that you see all these cases, if a man and woman, a man and wife, convey their property to their children, it goes without saying that's what? That the children have an obligation to support their parents from the property that was given to them. So the Gemara says, so who the ishtomi boy? What would I have said? Hasam hu the leka de tarach. So we'll say, it's not necessarily true, because in those cases that you just quoted, which are just two cases of almana, so when a woman is almana, there is no one who is working on her behalf, right? There's no one who's actively trying to support her. So I understand why in that case, the halacha goes out of its way to ensure that she has ongoing support from the estate. Aval hacha, nitrach l'didei. But here, all kidding aside, the father's still alive, let him get a job, right? He can go ahead and still work. Nitrach l'didei l'didar. Kamashlan, Abbas said that in Usha they were metaking that Allah, when a father goes ahead and conveys all of his property to his child or to his children, that Allah, he has to be supported from that property. So the Gemara says the following. So, Ibailahu, Hilchasak Havase, Oles Hilchasak Havase. To which the Gemara now asks, so okay, one again, I understand that in Usha they made the takana, but what's the kasha? Does the halacha follow this takana or not? So is this indeed the halacha that when a parent conveys property to a child, or full property? This, remember, this is not just a gift. This is now the child has conveyed full property to the child. So do the parents have the right to be supported from that property or not? Is that so? We know in Usha they were mitakin it. Shailas, is that the halacha? So we're supposed to listen to this. Tashma, Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Yonasan, Havu Kaimi. So I'll say what happens. Rabbi Chanin and Rabbi Yonasan were sitting together. Asu Gavri. So a particular man came along. Gochin v'neshke Rabbi Yochanan akare. He came and literally he kissed. Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yonasan's feet. Amr lei Rabbi Chanina, my high. Rabbi Chanina said, what's going on over here? The guy's kissing your feet. Amr lei, kosev nechasav lebanafu. This guy was a man who gifted all of his property to his children. And what happened? Va'ashesinhu lezanye. And I commanded the children to support him. Rabbi, by the way, is also so fascinating because one would assume that it would be intuitive for children to go out and do that. But yet we know that if there is one thing that tears families apart in a terrible fashion, it's money, it's inheritance, and you see from here, it's even gifts during lifetime. So Rabbi Yonasan says, I commanded the children to go ahead and to support their parents. So the Gemara says, one second. So if you want to say that we don't paskin like the Takana and Usha, then Rabbi Yonasan has to command the children to support their parents. But ultimately, again, if you want to say that it was a din, that it's halacha l'maisa, that they have to support their parents, then should Rabbi Yonasan have to have commanded the children? So we'll say the Gemara makes it sound like over here that halacha l'maisa, although it was the takana in Usha to go out and support the parents, that doesn't seem to be the halacha. So we'll say, how do we paskin? So first of all, again, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the takana in Usha, and indeed the halacha is that if parents go ahead and gift all of their property to their children during the lifetime of the parents, children, in fact, do halacha l'maisa have the obligation to support their parents from the estate that their parents gave them. The child doesn't necessarily have the obligation from their own money. That we'll get to the sugyas of kibud avaim in kiddushin, but they absolutely have the obligation to support the parents from the parents' former property. And we'll say, what about the other halacha about supporting your children? So this is very l'maisa. So the Shulchan Aruch says, and this is in Hilchos Ksuvah Simin Ayin Aleph Sif Aleph, Chayiv Adam Lazun Banav Ubinosav. A person is obligated to support his sons and daughters until they reach the age of 6. Avi Av Marosa, this is true even if what? Even if they have their own property. Marosa, because remember, kids could technically speaking have their own property. How? See, he writes, Shenaf Lomim Beis Avi Imam. This could happen from where they inherit from their maternal grandfather. Because let's say, again, their mother was an only child, and let's say their mother died. And that's the case. These children would inherit from their maternal grandfather. So it could be, let's say they have plenty of money. They have their own money. Nevertheless, the father is obligated to support them until the age of six. Umisham ve'elech. But, and what about from six and on? Zonin kitakonas chachamim ad shiigadlu. So I will say, we go in and we support them. Why? Like takonas chacham, referring to which takana? Takanas Usha, that you have to support them until they grow up. The Imlo Ratza, so what happens, Rabbi Say, ever, let's say the father doesn't want to support them. Gorinbo, umachlimin oso, upotrim oso. So if he doesn't want to, so we go ahead and we embarrass him. We embarrass him. We exert social pressure. The Imlo Ratza, and if he still doesn't want to, machrizin alav betzibor. We make an announcement for him. And shul, vaomrim, ploni achzarihu. This guy is a cruel man. It's amazing, quoting the Gemara. And he is worse than an impure bird that at least feeds its young, a reference to the raven. However, but we cannot force a father to support his children above the age of six. Again, remember, below six, where there's an absolute unequivocal obligation, you can force him. Above six, we can't force him. When is this true? B'she'ino amud. This is true only if we know that he's not wealthy. But if he has money, we know that he has assets, he has enough money to go ahead and support them, then motzien mimenu bal karcho. Then we go ahead and we extract funds from him forcibly. Mishum tzedakah. It's just basic tzedakah. Va'ozonin also ad sheigadlu. And vizana also ad sheigadlu. And we will go ahead and we support the children ultimately again until they grow up. So we'll say, sa'alocha lemaisa, we paskin like takanas usha, but we also say takanas usha essentially is a strong suggestion to go ahead and do it. But you can't enforce takanas usha with halachic muscle unless, of course, you know that the father has money, in which case you can extract money. But I'll say, interestingly enough, the Rama comments on this. He says, however, he talks about dowry. The Rama talks about dowry, that although there is a mitzvah to give your daughter an appropriate dowry, that we don't force a father to do. When it comes to the dunya, that every we hope the father does the right thing, but it's not kofano, so we wouldn't even embarrass him. But for for support of children until the age of six, is halachically obligatory until the child reaches the age of bar bat mitzvah. There is takanas usha, but we can't enforce takanas usha. Of course, the Aruch HaShulchan already comments. He says, obviously, societal things have changed, so the acceptable age to support one's children obviously has gone a little bit higher than 12 or 13 years old, but Allah Lamai said the basic core obligation until the age of 6, Takana Susha until the age of 12 or 13. We'll stop over here.